If you want aware and alive human beings, the best way to produce them is to have them be around other alert, alive human beings.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm David Albert. I'm a homeschooling father of two, author of three books on homeschooling, the latest one being Have Fun, Learn Stuff, Grow, Homeschooling in the Curriculum of Love. I'm an amateur storyteller and author and editor of two books on the uses of storytelling called The Healing Heart. I write several homeschooling columns in magazines. I play the violin rather badly. I sing opera rather better. And I work as the senior planner and policy analyst for the Washington State Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse.
Homeschooling dads, it's not very common, is it, would you say?
Well, let's put it this way, for every homeschooling mom, there is at least in theory a homeschooling dad.
Okay, because we usually hear, it's usually the women who are talking a lot about it. Men writing about it, but the women who seem to be involved in it.
We defined our family as a homeschooling family. I always insist that homeschooling is not just for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a chance for we as parents to reinvent ourselves in the process.
You use the term a learning family sometimes.
A learning family, correct.
Right. You wouldn't say there is like a role for the father will do things differently, maybe. Would you think that?
Well, sometimes I've called my wife the principal. But no, I don't think there is a special role that has to be ascribed to the male as opposed to the female in this relationship.
Mm-hmm. Though I do find that many women tend to focus more on the education part, though, I would say.
I think that's probably true. There are more women who, more families in which the man goes off and becomes the breadwinner. The women tend to either have part-time jobs or are more likely to stay home with the kids and organize the life of the home.
Learning and having fun, is it? I mean, the book is clearly showing that education is not such a big deal.
Yes, you know. I'm a great believer that education starts from the inside, not from the outside. Mm. And that, you know, as you go through life, as you grow, as you develop, you meet up with opportunities for action that stretch you in mind, body, and spirit. And as you are stretched, you yet meet up with new opportunities that move you in that direction. And I was trying to find the simplest summation I could for what I think homeschooling should be about, and I think I've done it in five words.
Which are?
Have fun,
yeah.
Learn stuff. Grow.
It's excellent because just reading your essays, you can see how when you're learning, it flows from one thing to the other. People have told me, his books are kind of intimidating because the kids are amazing and everyone's doing amazing things. But I thought, well, it seems as if you're out there in the world and you're following one interest to the next. It just flows, doesn't it?
Well, it just flows, and we work hard to provide opportunities for the kids and for ourselves as a family.
They don't just fall in your lap, right?
Oh no, we work very hard. I mean, I think all my books will suggest that strongly.
The idea of interference sometimes, like how we get in the way of our kids' learning. Like sometimes we'll have a pet project and we're setting our agendas versus theirs. Maybe can you comment on that?
Well, the first thing to be said is, you know, almost all of us who are homeschooling these days, we're not homeschooled ourselves. And so we carry around messages and ways of doing business and ways of thinking about education that we learned in our 13 years of incarceration. The interesting thing I think noting about school is that almost none of us learned how to learn at school, but we all learned how to teach. Oh. We had 13 years of models in front of us, often bad ones. And so we learned what that was about, and we have to go through this business of unlearning how to teach so that we can allow education to naturally occur. That I feel comfortable in saying for sure. I always have had my own learning projects independent of my kids. They've always been welcome to come on along and for the journey if they like. I don't insist on it, and I don't necessarily join theirs either. But I think the models of having, you know, it's interesting when you go to school, whether you had a good teacher or a bad teacher, you almost never had the example in front of you of a learning teacher. Children very rarely experience adults who they see learning around them. And if they see that example of you trying new things, often failing at them, making mistakes, and then with time, energy, and effort getting better at them and finding that they're meeting your needs and filling your spirit, kids are likely to do the same thing.
It's how you grow as well, isn't it?
Oh, I insist on that.
Yeah.
So, I insist on that.
So how have you grown, though, in this process, would you say?
Well, first thing, I was a frustrated musician. And as luck would have it, I guess, I have two musicians as children, two very different musicians, but two musicians. And in the process, I took up the violin at the age of 47, as I said in the introduction. I'm not particularly good at it, but I helped found a little community orchestra that now has 55 members in my own community. And at the age of 52, I had my operatic debut. This was a very interesting thing. There was a new opera company forming in our town. We saw a little ad for it. My older daughter, who had been singing since the age of 7, was now 14 and thought she would love to do that. I had no idea that 14-year-olds could join opera companies, but I always know they need bass singers to come sing along in the chorus, so I figured they'd get us as a package deal. I mean, after all, we were going to be driving there anyway, so I would have to wait, so might as well join. And so we both did. The interesting thing about that, of course, is I discovered that the vocal director had been singing since the age of 14, and the conductor had been conducting since she was 12, and they didn't think of this as particularly odd at all, but what did I know? I'd never sung opera before. I've been involved in 5 different operatic productions since. And I actually just came back this week from last weekend when I was at my older daughter's college, Smith College, where she entered with a paid research assistantship to work on a production edition of the first opera ever written by a woman in 1626, and it was performed to sell-out crowds, 2,100 people, over the weekend.
In your book, The Curriculum of Love, you talk about being at home in oneself.
That's so, correct. Yeah.
So that,
and trying to feel at home in one's own skin. And I mean that skin as small as the epidermis that you have around you, and the skin being the skin of the earth. If you want aware and alive human beings, the best way to produce them is to have them be around other alert, alive human beings.
Well, that's lovely. And learning experience is a kind of discovery. It's an ongoing process. I really like the way you've talked about our children going on their maiden voyage, kind of.
Right. You know, it's interesting. Ivan Illich, back in the 70s, once talked about education, and he meant institutionalized education, as education is learning under the assumption of scarcity. And when you think about schools and the way we do public education in our countries, the idea is that there's never enough time, there's never enough space, there's never enough individual attention. There's, you know, the assumption is that there couldn't be. Now, whether we're using our resources correctly is another question. I'm not an education reformer, and I never claim to be and never want to be. But I wonder what would happen if you simply went about assuming that education is learning under conditions of abundance. That's kind of a slogan that I try to keep in front of me in thinking about how I want our family to be learning.
And then also that psychological space that kids need as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about that too. Do you want to just comment on that?
Kids need to have the space to learn to be themselves. They need the time to become themselves and also to learn specific skills. I always like to use the example of how I failed walking about 300 times at 13 months. I mean, I fell, I tottered, I teetered, I scraped up a knee here and there, I balanced myself against walls, I slumped down against chairs. I mean, I failed walking 300 times, F's every time. But had they waited to 15 months, I would have had an A.
Come out to play. listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Would you say that teenagers, they are different from kids, so you can't expect to really do the same thing what you were doing as...
No, I always say if you're doing the same old with your teenager, especially a young teenager, and assuming that they are simply a child with hormones, you can be pretty sure you're doing the wrong thing. I mean, they reach a new developmental stage, you know, where they need mentors, not you, but other people in the community. They need to be able to try on future hats that they might wear in a future world that will be theirs and not yours. They need those opportunities to stretch themselves in new ways.
And that's maybe where you mentioned the hard work comes in, right?
It's very hard work, and it's very enjoyable work at the same time.
To get those mentors, I find, like, it's not... To have people committed in that way to your family, it's not sometimes very easy, so... I mean...
But they're all over the community. You just have to get a knack for finding them.
And you did mention you had an idea of community interviewing that kids or families could do.
Right. My friend Doug Lipman, in one of my books, The Healing Heart Communities, my friend, the storyteller Doug Lipman, talked about games that he uses to teach children community interviewing skills. Mm-hmm. And my favorite technique is to get a pair of kids, you know, if they have no idea what they want to seek in the community, is to put the kids on bicycles with a little one of those throwaway cameras and a little notebook, having taught them to do interviewing, and have them go out and interview the mayor, person who runs the hardware store, who may also be the mayor, a minister, a nurse, whatever. And as they do so, ask at the end of the interview whether they might allow an apprentice or somebody, apprenticeship, or just simply somebody to shadow them for a couple of days, or a mentoring experience. And if you have a homeschooling group, you can take those opportunities back, and you end up with an entire community library of mentors.
I love that chapter you have in the Have Fun, Just Mirror's New Friends. That's really a great kind of example. You know.
Well, she's an extreme example. She's very sociable. This is my younger daughter, very, very sociable, and she collects adult friends all over the community. But some kids aren't like that, and that's why, you know, if you can teach them interviewing skills and get them out on bikes and pairs, they can find new things that they would never have discovered for themselves. It doesn't come naturally to all children, and as my older daughter, Alia, used to say, oh, teenagers, I remember when she was a young teenager, she used to say, it's kind of like being a snake getting ready to shed its skin, and when they're getting ready to shed their skin, their eyes cloud completely over, and they have no idea where they're going.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your faith, though, as well, your Quakerism and the community? How did that help?
Well, you know, the interesting thing for me is, you know, it's very interesting. I don't separate my views on religion and on the spirit from my views on education. They're really all of a piece. I believe that the spirit reveals itself constantly and continually to all of us, and we just simply have to be open to that happening. And I watch as the subtitle of my second book, Journey of Original Seeking, suggests, you know, the seeking behavior, the seeking something beyond ourselves. We don't know what it is we're seeking, but it is beyond ourselves, and we're involved in this search lifelong. It's something that's inbuilt to us as humans. This, to me, is a core tenet of my Quaker faith.
And I would imagine it's quite supportive for the kids as well.
They've been very, very supportive. Alia, my older one, actually serves on a national committee of friends and flies from college to meetings in Philadelphia and Maryland all the time. I don't know how she gets all her schoolwork done, but that's her job, not mine. Both of them have been heavily involved in both our meetings life and in the larger Quaker community.
You sound so joyful. I find that lots of the people I've talked to in the community, the homeschooling community, seem to be so stressed out about it all, and there's not much joy. It just doesn't seem very joyful, basically, for lack of another word. It's just...
I guess I know the joyful one, so maybe I'm just projecting.
Really? Okay. Just the knowledge that it doesn't have to be so, like, you know, have you practiced, have you done your test, or whatever. It just seems so, you know, that's just not really... I know many people don't want that in their hearts, but somehow they just get
caught up. What's amazing to me is how much I've learned in the journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am generally speaking well-educated. I have more degrees than you'd ever want to know. I'll trade some for musical instruments. But what's amazing to me are so many of the things my kids became involved and interested in, I had no knowledge of whatsoever. And I always tell parents that ignorance is a great gift for the homeschooling parent.
One of the most moving parts in your book, the essay on She's Leaving Home, and just how short amount of time we actually really have with our kids.
Yeah, when there are homeschooling problems, one of the favorite things I like to say to parents, I mean, you know, a lot of parents come to me with problems. A lot of things are cured with time. You know, whether it's the kid with the, you know, I don't like him playing all those video games, or perfectionism, or whatever they come to me with, I say, you know, 2 years from now, write me a letter. You'll find out that you're laughing about the things you're concerned about now.
And just the whole idea of them not being with us for long, right?
No, they're not with us for very long. It's a very precious time in our lives. And I can tell you now, with an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old, it doesn't last all that long. Again, I think you pointed to it, that I like to look at learning as a voyage. But you don't know where the voyage is going to take you when you begin. But you could be sure that you're going to meet lots of new and interesting and intriguing sights along the way. And that doesn't mean they're always going to be pleasant, but they're almost always going to be interesting. And if you look at your learning journey as a family, again, not something to be done to the children, but something that you do together as a family, you end up exploring all kinds of mysterious islands that you never even knew were there.
I had another question. It was about conflict, when you have conflict in the family, though.
Mm-hmm.
How do you... Because I know, like, with homeschooling, day
in
day
house, my wife's always right. I don't tell her that when we're having a conflict, of course, but my experience has told me that's almost always the case.
Okay. You know.
Well, you know, usually when I'm having conflicts with children, it's because it's a kind of internal conflict that I'm having with myself, and I've discovered I just haven't wrestled hard enough with it, or there are scars left over from my own school days or days as a child that I haven't resolved for myself. It's kind of like, you know, when you have arguments with people about, you know, homeschooling, and the person's, you know, very clear, you can't convince them they don't like homeschooling, and you're very upset about it. You're upset about it. If a person has different views from your own, the simplest thing to be able to say is, oh, it's interesting that you think that. What made you think that? And thank you for your views. But the fact that you feel conflicted, and you may turn red in the face, or, you know, you come home feeling unsettled, often is a reflection of the fact that you have those conflicts in your own mind and heart.
I wanted to talk about community. See, it's very important to raise anyone, not necessarily homeschooling, I mean, just talking about kids in general, how they need the diverse community of people.
I always like to look at the community itself as our total learning environment. I mean, my first book was called, subtitled, Adventures in Homeschooling and Community-Based Education. And that so much of what we did didn't resemble school at all, but secondly, didn't take place in the home. And that, you know, we mined our community. And I don't think the community mined, because we gave as much back or more than we got in the process. And, you know, that we were in the process of helping to reinvigorate our communities. I look at schools sometimes. I'm constantly upset by schools in various ways. You know, they spend $2.5 million on a new football field that only football players can use, when the community is begging for park space. Or they'll start a new high school theater program, which is great for the high schoolers, except there are playhouses all over the community that are begging for actors and actresses and would be pleased as punch to take on some teenagers to learn new roles and to take roles in their productions and to help learn to do technical theater and whatever. You know, the enormous waste of resources in schools is extraordinary when you think of them not as school or education resources, but as community resources. If those resources were similarly available to the community, we could be living in better places for all of us.
Another thing is just the way teenagers, they need to contribute. They need to be part of this community,
sure.
And they're kind of locked out quite a bit.
We don't have to hothouse them.
If we can have more welcoming spaces, that would be...
Well, I mean, again, as I talk about in my second book, the homeschooling and the voyage of self-discovery, the young teen years were always the time for vision quests and walkabouts and rites of passage and mentorships, bar mitzvahs in the Jewish community, all under the auspices of adult members of the community and never your own family.
You start off with your family, then you move out. You need to...
Sure. And again, the interesting thing is, you know, we reject that wisdom, but this is a wisdom that's been learned by cultures around the world for you know, two or three millennia. And when we reject it, we do so at our peril.
Well, it's just been great talking to you.
Folks can look at my stuff on my website, www.skylarksings.com. That's www.skylarksings.com.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. All right, bye.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
A report on Spy Kids by Evelina Kay. Spy Kids 1 is good for many reasons. Number 1, the main characters are kids. Spy Kid, to be exact. I, for one, prefer the girl. The boy is sometimes a bit dumb. Reason number 2, they're involved in more interesting things than most people ever get to do in their entire lives. Reason number 3, they're brave. Reason number 4, and now we go from Spy Kids to Spy Robots. A copy of Carmen and a copy of Junie, which is the name of the boy, are going around home with 500 other ones. They're robots, so if you go and punch them, you're more likely to break your fist than break their skull, if you know what I mean. The copy of Carmen, he said to the boy, she said, "Poor Junie, defenseless and weak." And then she punches the wall and it actually breaks. All this cement and rock, and it's all breaking. It just breaks because she's really strong. She can actually pick him up and like spin him around in the air. It's really easy for her. When it comes to robots, they're pretty strong.
What's the movie about?
Well, it's about two kids. Well, their mom and dad were spies, and they're both on different sides, and then they married. In their room, they have all these weird things. The mom has this mirror and all these beauty bottles, but when she clicks them, they're really buttons. Buttons as in computer keys. And then the mirror turns around sideways, and there's a screen and everything. Well, all these secret agents are disappearing, and so there's this kids show, and they're people, they have these really weird things, and they're the secret agents transformed. They're the agents transformed into these really weird creatures, let's say. And then they're fum-fums, and they're really weird creatures, because they're robots.
Okay, so what's happened to the parents?
Well, they get caught when they go to go do it. Cornered by some fum-fums and in this huge ship.
So the kids have to
get them. But even, like, there's this ring that has this red ruby ring the mom has, and she turns it around, like, to the bottom of her finger, because the way she's tied some ropes, and then she presses it and she turns it, because it's really a laser beam, and it cuts through the ropes.
It's very high-tech. High-tech movie. Is that what you like about it?
Yeah.
Would you like to see a world like that?
No, because it's really dangerous. I probably isn't able to go outside without terror because of all those machines that work like that. I mean, all these things they can do. Well, they're electric gumballs, electroshock gumballs. And when you chew them and then you spit them or throw them, and then like they're electric. So the robot, the fum-fums, where like, they can kill the fum-fums because they're robots of them. And they could do it to same humans. So it's really gross.
Yeah,
it'd be really gross if that's how the world was, though. But I like it when it's a story.
But and how about the idea of having people that look the exact replica of yourself.
Now, that would be scary. But it's a good movie. It makes the movie really exciting.
Because I think it's already happening that people are cloning human beings.
I know, it's gross, but it's good for drama. Let's say. I like the robot kids. They're pretty cool. I wouldn't like that to happen, but it's pretty cool to see. They're really weird, let's say. So it's really interesting.
Take chances! Make mistakes! Get messy!
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.